Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. For those of you who were listening last week, I know last week was a more difficult show because it dealt so much with concepts, especially about how we think mentally in comparison to other ways of thought and a lot of other issues. I thought today's show, I'll go slower on, and we'll make this into like a several-part series, because one of the problems I have found in doing a one-hour radio show on something as complicated as, you know, what we talk about here, which is how come life is the way it is, and how come everything exists the way it is, and all these terribly complex issues, is that it is almost impossible to do it in a simple way that, you know, is relatively understandable by most people within that hour's time. So I tend to lose some people sometimes, and I apologize for that. But today's show, I get to do it more slowly and to develop more examples, and we can also be more open to people, you know, mulling over what I say, so that it will be less intense, we'll say. So today's show is on what a living planet is, what Earth as a living planet, how it has behind it a creator who has decided to create life in a certain way, and why that is the case. As a matter of fact, I'm going to start off with the why at the very beginning, because I think that's really a good place to start from. How come, if Earth is not just some happen chance bunch of chemicals and minerals and other things that got thrown together, and suddenly we have a very complex level of life that's developed here. Life was on this planet really very quickly after its formation, much more quickly than many people may realize. And beyond that, it had many different ups and downs and changes in course. And all of this fits into a general plan or concept. And what is that concept? Well, Earth is the kind of planet, which is relatively rare, that is in physical form. Well, physical means that we can see it right where we are, and we understand what it's all about from the physical side of existence. And it is designed to develop life in the most quick way possible, but also the most contentious or forceful way possible. And you might say, well, why would a being that is cooperating with the creator of our entire universe, and we'll say Earth is sort of influenced by a very high-level being that is cooperating with the God of our universe, why would God and or other beings that are helping to create parts of God want to have a planet be contentious and forceful in the way that it develops life? Why not make it all copacetic and easy, and so there isn't going to be any, you know, really difficulties in the life, and make it easier for life to go? And the answer is that we as human beings are a crucial element in the development of life in any world. And for life, as life develops underneath us in the lower kingdoms, it takes on certain characteristics that are then imbued into the human life itself. And some of that in this world is to be tenacious and to be able to deal with very difficult, very, very hostile sometimes elements to life. So that, are you listening? Yeah. So that we, as a planet, can overcome the most negative elements to life. And the most negative element I'm aware of to life is evil. What is evil? Evil is the negation of human life to the idea that God is the... God's thought, I should say, is the way to think, and God's existence is the way to exist in. sometimes that God itself even exists, but in most cases, evil actually knows that God exists, but it seeks to become something other than God and to negate God's existence rather than to become part of God. That may surprise some of you, because evil, many people think evil is that God doesn't exist. Well, that isn't true. As a matter of fact, some people who are atheists, which means they don't believe that there is a creator or God, are not necessarily evil at all. Whereas there are some great, great embodiments of evil that believe in a God or believe that God in some sense exists, but seek to represent their methods of, quote-unquote, their belief in a way which is against the principles of spirit and spiritual thought or God's thought and seek to destroy the growth of life itself through force and through intimidation and destruction. Wow. So here we are on a planet that one of the planet's purposes is to develop eventually human life, and we are here now, yes, but it takes a long time, and I'm going to go through all this and how that takes place, so that it can eventually overcome some of the worst elements of evil. Wow. And very, very few planets, in physical form especially, have this as their, we'll say, not only goal, but more one of their more important goals. And with that thought in mind, the being that helped create Earth, and that we could say is like Earth is like a body of this being in some respects, and is intimately connected with the God of our universe, the way this being sees the necessity for life to grow on Earth is to grow as quickly as possible, but under some of the most adverse of circumstances, so that this life eventually develops a highly tenacious form of life in every category, and especially eventually when humans come into being. Because without highly tenacious and very tough human life, evil within humanness, within humanity, will destroy, and the rest of humanity will succumb to the evil. So we've got to become unusually resourceful, unusually strong as life forms in order to overcome the evil that was allowed, but not necessarily forced to, but allowed to develop in this world. In a lot of worlds, evil is kept out because the world itself is developed in a much more slow fashion, one in which forces are kept at a minimum and very little evil gets in. So you might say, well, why not make all the worlds like that and then we don't have to worry about evil at all? And the answer to that is diversity. If you were to do that, if the universe, if God were to choose to do that, God would be limiting its own growth in a weird way. So in order for God to grow in the most diverse ways, which helps its overall growth, it has to allow for evil. Okay, I'm going to say that one more time. I'll say it in a slightly different way. In order for God to grow in the best ways, the most productive, the ways that allow for highly creative outcomes, ones that produce life that is amazingly divergent, amazingly synthetic and able to adopt and create from others and learn from others as well as create within itself, there has to be the allowance for some of the worst kinds of evil, because evil is part of the diversity, part of the freedom that must be built into the system for the maximum benefits of all. Not because evil is a good thing, but because evil is part of life, even if it's a terrible part of life, and life itself has to find ways to overcome evil, and some planets, a few, proportionately, have to be developed in a unique or relatively unique way to combat some of the worst forms of evil at a particular time in the development of our universe. Earth is directly in that path. And you can say, well, I didn't sign up for this. How do I get out of here? Let me go to one of those 99% of the other planets that aren't like this, you know? And the answer to that is, you've got the choice. Every one of us are a soul, and we're temporarily, you know, kind of like numbed. Our brain isn't working very good. Brains aren't working very good. We make huge mistakes as we descend into form and into the energy, denser energy realm, such as the physical one we're in, which is the most dense. And we start adopting darker and darker ways, and some of us actually move towards evil. But as souls, if we make it back to being souls, well, some of the people who choose to be completely evil never get back to being their souls, so they're not going to understand this. But the rest of us are going to go back to being our souls after living in higher dimensions of time and space, and we'll rejoin our souls, and believe it or not, we're going to decide, vast majority of us, but not all of us, to come back to this world and to continue in this relatively difficult, almost impossible, planet of life when we have the option. I want you to know this. We all chose to be here. We had the option while we were in our soul state, and our soul is still in that state. We're just a piece of it, to go elsewhere. So I don't want you to think that someone has forced us to be here. It is our choice. But in absentia from our limited consciousness while we're physically alive, our full conscious state as a soul is making that choice all the time, or we wouldn't be here. Because souls can leave a world if they really don't think it's their cup of tea. And that usually is based upon the goodness they can produce. If a soul says, well, gee, you know, I keep screwing up in this world, this is really not working out, and they're really thinking of other souls. They're thinking of life in general. And then they leave. They don't leave more for what we would call personal reasons as much as for the betterment of life itself. And some souls do leave all the time. And a few come in as well. But for the most part, we just stick around because we recognize that this is an opportunity to function in one of the most difficult but the most creative as well and diverse places to grow in life and to help other lives to grow as well. So there is a big reward in it, but while we're physically alive particularly, it sucks. It really is a difficult place. Let's go back to the beginning. Now that you understand the why, maybe, of how come the world is in general the way it is, then let's go back to like the very beginning of how Earth got going and the choices that were made. And then as you see these as choices rather than just some kind of happen chance of quote-unquote evolution, which in a lot of ways has many contradictions in it. I'll bring up some of them as we go through this over the weeks of time because this is going to take more than one show to do. But I'm not here to prove or disprove evolution because evolution is part of the process. But it isn't the cause. It isn't the why. It's just like, it's like a tool. It's like God says, well, here's one of my big tools to create evolutionary forces that are particularly difficult so that those life forms that eventually come to be developed on a planet are very tenacious, very resourceful, and fight strongly, eventually, in the human kingdom against evil more than they would on a planet that is everything is copacetic on, or most of the things are, and forces are relatively reduced. Now, I'm not telling anybody that they, again, are here because of punishment. Some people think that, and that is not what I'm saying. I say just the opposite. This is actually, in a weird way, a kind of rewarding experience, although from the perspective of a human being who is physically alive most of the time, that human being probably would not agree with that position. Okay, so let's go back to the very beginning. At the time that our solar system was going to be formed, it was decided that it would be highly, we'll say, responsive to the densest forms of energy in the ways that life would be focused on within itself, meaning that there would be a third planet from the sun, us, Earth, that would have physical life on it that would eventually and quickly as possible, develop the most tenacious life forms that are most adaptable. But the way that it was going to be done, this was going to be done, would be to choose a ray focus of the planet, meaning that the energy that it was most receptive to would be the ray focus that is most forceful and is also most swift in both developing forces and in overcoming forces by life that exists there. This is called the third ray of type of energy. And this energy is very, very active, very responsive to, we'll say, big changes in energy. And in terms of human understanding, it develops quickly the following kinds of principles in life. Communication. It's very strong on communication. Very big on communication. It develops life that seeks to communicate with other life as quickly as it can. And even in pre-life, it develops chemistry on a planet very rapidly. And oxygen, which is an element that is a third ray element, is oftentimes a dominant type of, we'll say, element that is eventually the way life is going to grow. However, in the very beginning, the opposite is true, because if you introduce too much of oxygen, things go too quickly, and life can literally burn itself out before it can develop forms and ways of communicating to handle the forces, the power that oxygen produces in the life form. Oxygen gives life forms very swift ways of moving and very swift ways of interacting. But if the communication levels are not kept equally high, and if some level of consciousness is not developed in life forms fast enough, they will destroy each other and all life on the planet will cease. So oxygen has to be kept to a minimum for a large amount of time while life is gaining other experiences to overcome other kinds of forces that are more slowly, have to be more slowly worked on before you can introduce large amounts of oxygen. Otherwise, life just ceases. You might say, well, how does that play out? How did that happen then? What was done on Earth to keep this from happening? And let me tell you, the being, again, that was involved in creating Earth decided that basically there would be very little oxygen available by the chemistry that was used to create the planet. This was done by combining two different types of planetoids, we'll call them, together, so that Earth had an unusual imbalance in the amount of free oxygen that could be present in the atmosphere and or oceans of earlier Earth. From literally 4.5, give or take, billion years ago until approximately 570 million years ago, there was relatively small amounts of oxygen for life to be able to use. And consequently, the life itself could not grow very large, could not interact very successfully, and could not create very much power in its own development, and within itself had to learn how to communicate from one cell to another to create a very complex organism that took a long time to be developed. For literally billions of years, almost all life was single-celled, meaning that cells could not communicate well enough with other cells to form a unity and develop life forms that were anything more than like colonies of single-celled organisms. That was the that was like the highest level. There was even more to just free-floating single cells. So it's kind of a strange thing that what we conceive of as life today was not the kind of, we'll say, definitive and normal type of life that existed, say, a couple of billion years ago. Just the opposite. We had life that was extremely slow and presented itself in relatively small ways of using energy and could not collectively form itself into anything other, more than a collection of single cells, which we call a colony, and that didn't support the ability to develop a organism that had a unique consciousness of highly refined and developed cells that we would call like a plant or animal in itself. This meant that the forces that were applied, we'll call it evolutionary forces, that were applied were non-oxygen related forces, so things went very slow. And the main thing that the planet was trying to do in developing life was to imbue in these life forms the ability to survive when they couldn't communicate, when they had a lack of power, when they had relatively limited resources. So life developed itself to first deal with the most stringent, the most difficult, the most, we'll say, non-productive ways of existing under the most severe circumstances. And what were some of those circumstances? Well, the planet was designed to go through all kinds of catastrophes where oceans themselves had difficulties in their chemical balances, where temperature extremes were produced from very hot regions of the Earth, where the life originally came not from, everybody thinks of life as coming from the sun, but actually came from the inner elements of the Earth itself. The Earth, because of radioactivity inside and because of gravity producing very high temperatures both, actually produced the very first life. The first life didn't come from photosynthesis and didn't come from the surface of the planet. It came from very high pressures, literally forces, we'll call it, very high forces that were put onto the very most primitive kinds of cells that were not using very much oxygen, but were using other chemicals to create some level of energy coming directly out of the center into the mantle of the Earth and at the bottom of the ocean floor. You know, these smokers, some people call them, that produce energy coming from volcanoes and just beginning volcanoes, in some cases no volcano at all, but just open abscesses in Earth's crust, produce the very first life on Earth. So the very first life did not come from any place other than the planet itself. Some people say, well, what about a comet coming in and bringing in materials and this sort of stuff? Yes, it's entirely possible that there might have been some additional elements of life added to the life that was created here from sources that are extra terrestrial in nature, that are maybe from some other planetary system outside of our own, and outside of our own solar system even. But for the most part, this is not necessary to have what did take place, which is that our planet actually created the conditions for the most torturous kinds of life that used little, if any, oxygen in its development. And yet, this life was the abundant, and for a billion years or longer, the main form of life. And here it's under tremendous force because it's literally below water by miles in depth. And this is the life that that today is believed to be the first life that existed on Earth. And you can see why, if you want to start at the very beginning of a process, you're going to start by making something incredibly adaptable under the most severe circumstances, because it becomes part of the very nature, the very foundation of what all other life is going to come from. And then in addition, in order to adapt to even more severe conditions, more severe circumstances, the environment on Earth starts to change. And as it changes to test life and to produce life that has even greater tenacity in terms of temperature ranges, from extreme heat down to extreme cold. These kinds of vast changes, and then also changes in chemistry, eventually in the oceans themselves, because the life gives off, doesn't necessarily use oxygen, but in some cases produces oxygen. Some of the life, about a billion years into the development of the planet, starts to produce oxygen. And this life is more in the shallows of the ocean. But as it starts to produce oxygen, this changes the nature of the chemistry of the oceans. And it really makes changes in pH. It changes whether or not a particular area is basic or acidic. And it changes the available kinds of chemistry that even still these one-celled organisms are using. And it, again, taxes the adaptability. It forces the life to make more and more changes, more and more, we'll say, adaptations, so that it's going to be really, really tough as the basis of all other life to come. And it's going to learn how to synthesize and change more rapidly than life on a world that isn't put under these kinds of extreme pressures. This was designed into the very first few billion years of life on our planet so that all life that comes from this life will have this in its nature. And the genes that produce it can be turned on, if necessary, to make life even more resourceful. And it learns how to be extremely adaptable under the worst circumstances. This is the amazing part of how our world was developed. Think about that. And this was a design now. This is not the way most worlds are designed. It's a design for Earth. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you some other things that go back to the very beginning of Earth's development and our solar system that are important to know, that are conditions and that were put into the mix so that we can get a kind of feel for what it is that the creator of our world was considering at the time that it was developing it. And we'll be back in, give or take, about 2.5 minutes. And when we do, I'll continue on with this subject.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. And today we are talking about how the life of Earth is relatively unique and how it began and developed. And this is going to be a series, so I'm going to explain a lot more than what we can go into in a single show. I want to tell you that how planets like Earth are treated within, say, a galaxy. Let's say a galaxy has a couple hundred billion stars. All right, that's a lot of stars in that ballpark. And of those couple hundred billion, not that many of the stars, percentage-wise, have physical planets like Earth on them. Most of them actually function in what is considered for most of their existence in other dimensions than the physical dimension. The physical is the most difficult, and not every star goes through the development of physical planets in that particular incarnation of that star. And so by our perspective, we're not going to find a large proportion of planets that are Earth-like. And I'll tell you something else. It's a little secret, but I'm going to let it out. And that is that every planet that is like Earth, that is expected to eventually develop an advanced civilization, we are not there yet, is supposed to eventually develop, we'll call it colonies, within a series of other stars that surround it. And so we'll call it a collection of stars. Some people will call it a constellation, but it's not exactly like that in comparison to what we use the word today in constellations. But a group of stars that fall together that are in our neighborhood within, say, and this is going to sound like a large number, but within, say, as much as 1,000 light years of us, that will be considered our neighborhood. And within that neighborhood, most of the stars and planets that could support some type of physical existence or that we may modify to do so will eventually fall under our domain when we become an advanced civilization, and most of us are beyond the normal we consider today to be development of being human. We'll call them superhumans. We'll eventually become these more superhuman kinds. And at that point, and that could be thousands of years from our present time scale, we will then have contact with other planets that are doing the same kind of thing, and some of them won't be at all down in the third ray, which we are, and won't so much be involved with the forces that we were brought to be developed with, but will interact with us. That's just so way off in the future, because our neighborhood, which could be as much as 1,000 light years wide in circumference, give or take, and at a minimum, probably 100 light years. So somewhere between 100 and 1,000. That seems like a huge number. I realize that, but it's really not. We will be pretty much the planet responsible for that area. And other planets may interact with us, but that'll be like our territory. And that will be the areas that we are responsible for further developing life in. But this is like way out there. And for most people, you really have to kind of like expand your mind, so to speak, to see that the humanity, not as it is today, but as it develops itself into a super kind of humanity, will eventually be able to do this thing that I'm telling you about. You say, well, if you can't go faster than the speed of light, how could you deal with something that's 1,000 light years? Because even at the speed of light, it'd take 1,000 years to get there. Well, if you travel interdimensionally to go someplace, at the height of the speed of light in the monastic world, as an example, 1,000 light years can be traversed in 1 year at the speed of light of mental light. And at the speed of light in the next dimension, you can get there in a day or two. So, I mean, things really change. If you are dealing with the relative speeds of light in comparison to the physical dimension we live in right now. So it isn't all that hard to understand. And then you can also look at other elements of space-time where you can, quote-unquote, fold space and other things. So it isn't like we are trapped where we are. It's just we're trapped based upon our present level of understanding and technology, not in terms of the eventual ability to move to other parts of our neighborhood, say, within the galaxy. So if you start to compute this whole thing out, there are literally potentially many thousands of planets that could be like Earth within our own galaxy, even though there is only a segment of the galaxy where an Earth-like planet could exist. You couldn't put an Earth-like type planet too close to the center of the galaxy. There's too much going on there, and there's too much radiation and too many things getting crashed and crunched and everything. And you couldn't do it too far away from where we are, because there are other conditions that exist that make it very difficult for an Earth type of planet to actually exist very long enough for a human civilization to be developed, because only certain types of stars can develop around, have planets developing around itself, or themselves, that will sustain the kind of life that Earth has on it. So we're kind of like in a little, sort of like a semi-narrow band that is our territory for while we're in physical form. Of course, we don't stay in physical form very long, and that's an important thing to remember. We spend a good deal more of our lifetimes, in terms of dilated time, in the astral and monastic dimensions than we do while physically alive. So that's another thing to consider when we're talking about time and the development of life. But physical life has a very important quality to it, and that is diversity. And so let's go back to our story and see how diversity plays into this. Going back billions of years ago, why is the Earth and the being creating the Earth deciding that it is so important to do all these horrendously difficult things to life that exists on Earth? Well, because the life is learning how to cope with all kinds of different niches where it could live. It's being forced out of one niche and into another. So life is diversified through the forces of these changes in acidity, in oxygen content or non-oxygen, in other kinds of chemistry, as well as temperature and pressure. All these things are changing what kind of life can live where. But also imbuing in every kind of life this tenacity and ability to survive almost any kind of experience, which is a very important thing. So while life is being diversified, it's also being toughened and vice versa. So both conditions are coming into play. The toughening kind of works against diversity by killing off some life, while the diversity works against the toughness by giving life specialization and the ability to fit into a niche that is important to that particular kind of development of life that uses actually other ray types of energy besides just the abundant levels of third ray energy, and allows life to become something much, much more creative over time. Again, if we go back billions of years ago, we find that for a very long time, most of the life remains undiversified and almost like all the other kind of life around. And so you end up with, you know, a certain kind of bacteria and then eventually a certain kind of algae dominating life. But the interesting thing is that as new life is developed, the old life tends to remain. So you still, that's how diversity is built up here, because you're not usually killing off all of the old life. There's still some of it around. And so you have like another direction that life can grow in, while the older life is also evolving and changing, but not completely changing into what the new life is. And so you get branches, and each branch is starting to develop itself in a unique way. And this is all being done deliberately. It's not by the happen chance that is sometimes associated with the evolutionary model. It's being done for a purpose. The purpose is that life has to become this tenacious thing. Otherwise, when it gets to become eventually, and we're going to get to this in other shows, us, we can make choices to fight off this very, very destructive element we call evil. If we aren't tough from all of these prior things that have gone on within all the elements that make us a great being of great, tremendous complexity, trillions and trillions of cells, and each grouping of cells do some amazing things and are so complex, giving us great ways of being creative, but also many more ways of being choosing of how we can overcome the adversities around us, and especially the most adverse thing is evil. Now, some of you might ask, well, did evil actually exist? If evil is this thing that really comes about through human existence, did it exist in some latent form in life like several billion years ago? I mean, was it like sitting dormant in this bacteria that's running around, which is not even fully, you know, a fully developed animal life form? It's just sort of something in between. And the answer to that is, in an odd way, the very development of the stresses that were imposed on life on Earth specifically allowed that life from the very beginning to develop a certain level of aggressiveness and darkness that promoted eventually in human beings the conscious state of inviting evil from cosmic sources into this world. So the answer is, in an odd way, yes. Even the very basis of life on Earth, it was designed to be a laboratory for overcoming evil when it reached the state of human consciousness. But it wasn't evil back at that time. We'll call it darkness. We'll call it the seeking of a state of preeminence of one life over another kind of life. And the separation of life being of and unto itself in comparison to life that is around it being different and a foe. And you might say, well, what about other worlds? Is this true there? And for the most part, no. Earth, again, is this model that is designed to accelerate the development of life that is tenacious and can eventually fight off evil. Most planets, physical planets like Earth, are not designed this way. They're designed so that life interacts in ways that helps it to communicate and balance itself in its communication with other life, and that it cooperates and shares with and develops higher and higher levels of intelligent activity with. That is not the model that Earth works under. And it was not the model that was designed into the system from the very beginning. So you wouldn't expect it to come out in human beings towards the end of this development. I hope you're following me, because what I'm telling you is a little bit obtuse, but maybe not so obtuse. That Earth basically, right from the get-go, was designed to have within its system a darkness of separation of life, of contentiousness from one life form being different from another, with competition and forcefulness being an ingredient within the system. And I, you know, some of you who are evolutionists are going to say, well, that's just biology. And I say, well, yeah, but it's the biology of Earth. It is not the biology of the universe. As a matter of fact, Earth is extremely different from most other worlds. We are the atypical type and way of developing life, not the typical. We are the planet that you come to if you really want to see how hard things can get. Even if you're a one-cell organism, that's a true statement. And as you develop into more complexity, it becomes more difficult. And it becomes more obvious that this is the true statement. So what we consider to be the norm for life on Earth is the non-norm for life in general throughout our physical universe and all other dimensions of our universe. It's quite an oddity. And to be here is kind of a privilege, because it's rare to go to any world to find this level of separation between life forms and competition and struggling. You could call it survival of the fittest, and forces, and life diversifying so quickly and becoming so resilient and so tenacious and so fighting. These are the characteristics that are imbued into the humanity of this planet, but they are also part of some of the most primitive types of life. And it gets worse from that point forward. The most primitive types are the least diverse, the least separative, the least doing what I said, and it goes into the greater elements of that as you move into more complex life forms. And some people might say, well, what about viruses? Viruses are extremely well part of life. Aren't they always in a way contentious? I mean, viruses generally feed on other life. That's kind of like the way they exist. And the answer to that is kind of an interesting answer, in that viruses actually are not the earliest types of life. Viruses came about in an odd way because there was relatively the same type of life, and there was the opportunity to use the sameness of life against itself to help the virus to develop itself. But therefore, viruses had to wait before they could be developed, in my opinion. Now, you can say, well, where's the proof of that? We don't have, at this point, a way of knowing what I'm telling you is true, because everything else I've said to you has been found in fossil records in other ways. This is one place where I'm going to just tell you my opinion that viruses came later in the scheme, but they came from life that wasn't making it even in the sameness of life, and some of the group souls of that life weren't even able to maintain the cooperation and intelligent, relatively low levels of intelligent interaction among itself at any forms that were different. And so those forms became moved towards the virus side, towards the parts of life that were infectors and users to create their own life out of life that existed. So that, and that was probably the very beginning of the most contentious issues in life on Earth, was the advent of what we will call some of the RNA and then eventually DNA type of viruses. And that came about much later than the original development of the same types of life forms, building large colonies throughout mostly the oceans. Let's see how I'm doing on time. We're running out very quickly, so I want to make sure I've gotten today's concepts down pretty good for you. And without going into a lot of detail today, we've generally looked at our planet as being a unique place, a place where God and those that co-create with God can experiment in the most forceful ways of growing life, which it accelerates life very quickly to grow in tenacious ways. It doesn't mean it's the fastest way to grow life, period. It's the fastest way to grow life that's very tenacious, that can deal with high levels of forces to eventually deal with the most stringent parts of evil when there eventually gets to be human life. And before there's human life, with darkness. Darkness not necessarily being evil, because evil refers to a certain level of consciousness that doesn't exist in lower forms of life, but the darkness that evil comes out of was there to begin with. And on Earth, a lot of this darkness is there because life has a challenge to fight against other life that is different from itself in this world by the very nature of the way the planet produces continuous challenges to life. Through temperature extremes, through acid and basic extremes in chemistry, through changes in things like radioactivity and how much heat and how much darkness and light might be available, how much cold there is, all the stresses that we consider, and other elements of the environment, such as high winds and the type of rains we have, and whether it's water-based environment or some other chemicals that are present, all these things are forces that are deliberately imposed to get life to become tough and at the same time to diversify. And our planet is like one of the top planets in doing this. Maybe in the top 0.1% in the way that it chooses to do it. Certainly in the top 1%, I think in the top 0.1% of physical planets, like rocky planets like us, that are doing it. And so we are rare. And in our rarity, we may find ways to eventually overcome the worst kinds of evil. But that's for probably next week's show, because we're running out of time in this week's show to go further with this. I'm having a good time with this. I hope this you're finding this interesting and it's making some sense to you. And email me if it isn't or if you have other questions about it. I didn't give you the phone number today, but I will tell you this. You can email me at thoughts@whylifeis.com and I'd love to hear from you. And next week I'll give out the phone number. I guess I just wanted to chat today and yak today, and that's all. I guess I forgot to tell you that. Okay. So on Sunday, August 31st, that's this Sunday, right before the holiday, you can listen in at 1170 a.m. in the northeastern part of the country and listen in to the Afterlife Part 3 at 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Okay, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And if you're someplace else, you can get it on WDISAM.com and listen to it on the internet. And also, I want to mention that this Monday, this coming Monday, September 1st, which is, of course, Labor Day, those of you who are in the Phoenix metropolitan area, go over to go over to Glendale at Borders Books and Music. I'll get it out. Okay, there it is. And from 7 to 8:15 p.m., hear Mimi talk about the science of dreams. And she's going to be talking to you. There's no charge. You can just come in there and participate and listen to what she has to say. And she's got a lot to talk about. And I hope you can come to hear that. So hopefully today's show has gone slow enough, and we've covered this subject well enough, so in the next week's show, I can go way further astream and tell you much more about how this system was developed on our planet that is so interesting to make our world a unique place for all of us to grow on. Okay, so until next week, of course, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.
Ooh.